Hi, folks. This is James French.
This is Ted Diamond.
And you're listening to the Awareness Connection, a podcast where we talk about mind-body awareness, health, and human development. And today we're going to be talking about something that we've been talking about in our classes recently, in your classes, Ted. This issue of what you've called a curriculum. This is a familiar notion to educators worldwide. But specifically, the creation of a curriculum for the subject that you teach, Ted, which is, you know, mind-body awareness, health, and human development, specifically sensory motor awareness, you've called it, but also following the work or following the footsteps of F.M. Alexander. So a very seminal figure in this subject. So we're going to be touching today on the issue of a curriculum, what a curriculum is, why it's necessary, how you came up with it, and maybe some of the origins or some of the inspiration for this. So how would you like to start?
Good question. I think a good starting point might be Alexander's, just a bit of his story. Because yeah. Because that story is so unique. I think it's where it comes from. You know, so here's a guy who has you know, aspirations to be an actor, mm-hmm. and he's Australian. He's beginning to perform, and then he develops a not unfamiliar kind of difficulty with his voice, and begins to explore. Well, he doesn't simply try to treat the problem. He realizes that something he's doing when he vocalizes is problematic. So he begins to explore how he uses his voice. But he goes into it in much more depth than most people would think of doing.
Yeah.
And in that sense, I think what he did in looking at how he used his voice was if it may not have been unique in the vocal world, where a lot of people have tried to figure out how to use the voice better, but it was mm-hmm. certainly unique in the kinesthetic world of bodily awareness. Because okay. what do you have there? There you have modes of treating the body, body work, stretching, yoga, relaxation, exercise, and all kinds of theories about kinesthetic awareness. But I can't think of one person in all those fields who's actually done a systematic systematic look at how they perform an action to figure out how to do it more consciously.
Yeah.
I mean, what an amazing story that is.
Yeah.
And when he figured out how to solve that problem, and I think he was not only the first person to look at it, but the first person to solve that problem. Mm-hmm. He thought, well, I can't expect other people to go through what I went through, because it took him at least 5 or 6 years, probably longer. We're not sure. Mm-hmm. But he developed a hands-on method to show them, people, his students, how to do things. Coupled that with some basic principles like learning to pay attention, learning to stop, etc. And that became the Alexander technique.
Yeah, that's the famous Alexander technique, you know, the image of the teacher with their hands on a student, especially the, you know, their hands on their neck and the head and guiding them through various movements, famously in and out of a chair or walking. And yet, you know, you compare what's known about the Alexander technique, or maybe the famous image of the Alexander technique, you compare that with the story that Alexander wrote in his later years, looking back on when he was making a study of his vocal use in his early 20s. So he was what, in his 60s, he was what, perhaps 60 years old when this story was published. And he was looking back on his early years as a professional vocalist in Australia. When he developed this problem, and he told the story of how he made this study and what he did. And you compare the two, and they're quite different. Yeah. You know, there's no one guiding Alexander in and out of a chair. There's no one exhorting him to, you know, lengthen in stature, or there's no one telling him to, you know, perhaps move more gently or consciously. What we see in Alexander technique is quite different from what he wrote as his study. It's quite striking, I think.
Totally. Yeah. To me, his story is not only an in-depth look at how the body works in action, but also something like Zen and the Art of Archery. There was some element that I always felt that story, for people who are not familiar with that, that's a very short little narrative account. Someone made a very beautiful little a narrative account of someone who studied archery, studied Zen through the art of archery, as it's sometimes taught in martial arts, and describes learning how to not only pay attention to himself, but also how to wait and to pay and to learn to let the arrow go without having to control the whole process. And there's something similar in that account to what Alexander did.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is... we look at it, you know, we see it as this way of getting out of a chair and how to move better. Yeah. It's sort of, you know, as a young person studying his work, I thought, there's nothing about that. There's so much more depth to it than that. But yeah. So look how it's taught. It's taught with this hands-on work, showing you how to move. And then the student learns to move better and says, oh, I'm moving better, so I could sort of apply that to what I'm doing. I may get relief. I may feel better. But this is not how you actually learn it.
Yeah, yeah. And
what Alexander actually went through and what there is there, it doesn't capture the real discipline.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Like, you know, you make the comparison to it. Is it Eugen Herigel? Is that the author of Zen and the Art of Archery?
Yeah.
You know, you make the comparison between the story of Zen and the Art of Archery that Herigel tells and the story that Alexander tells. And of course, you know, one of the big differences is that there is an educator in Zen and the Art of Archery. And there's no educator in Alexander's story. It's sort of the story of a person making their own study. But in Zen and the Art of Archery, it's similar, because what you see is the educator, the archery teacher, you know, the archery master, really just allowing the person to struggle through until they have their own insights. And you see in Alexander's narrative, evolution of a technique, him struggling through his own study, having insight after insight and learning how to fit them together.
Yeah. And even more than that, you could say, yeah, I like that idea. Not only that, they both have a kind of a definable goal that they're trying to achieve. But when you're having Alexander lessons, there's no definable goal. And that's why a curriculum is needed. But if you don't have a definable goal, what's going to happen? You're going to rely on the teacher. Half of what you learn is going to be sort of given to you sort of vicariously through a teacher's hands. And then you're going to say, oh, I've had these experiences and I think I know how it works. But then what I saw happen is that people I'd known who trained really with quite good teachers who were now teaching, sometimes who taught for 10 or 15 or 20 years, still couldn't articulate what they're doing because they said, well, you can't really talk about it. You have to just kind of experience it. And I say, yeah, but if you can't talk about it and you just have to experience it, how are you going to communicate that to your students? You know, can you even articulate what you're doing? And for the most part, they couldn't. And I thought, that's too much. That feels too much like an esoteric discipline where you can't get the experiences except by being part of a sort of an initiatory group. It's going to kind of impart it to you because it's sort of specialized knowledge. And I thought there has to be a better way. And I didn't know that there was a better way. I didn't know there was a possibility of a better way until I'd been teaching for years. I don't think it really, I fully embraced the idea that I could come up with a curriculum, what, till sometime in the pandemic. I had
within the last 5 years, really.
Yeah, so I've been teaching 35 years or something. And then I thought, wait a minute, there's pieces I was missing. If I could find those pieces and articulate them, I think I could put together a very clear kind of pathway of learning so that now if I want to learn how to use my voice more effectively, I can follow these steps, even without a teacher's guidance. I could learn, I can actually identify what I need to learn, and I could gain the same kind of competency, you know, the Zen archer gained or Alexander gained, because I can follow these steps and I kind of know where I'm going with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, can you say more about, you know, because I think that this will lead us into what you've just said. You know, you've laid out a nice set of topics here for us to talk about for the rest of the episode. Can you tell us more about what you meant by like an esoteric discipline? Because I've heard you say this before, and I've heard you explain it, and I've heard you compare your previous understanding of what was necessary for learning versus your present understanding. And I know that a lot of people, if they're familiar with Alexander technique, they'll know that they'll recognize when you discuss the necessity of hands-on work or the lack of necessity. You know, could you just say more about that?
Yeah. You know, esoteric implies that there's a very select group of people that has knowledge you want. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of disciplines like that, not just contemplative or, you know, Eastern or mystical traditions, but other areas where, you know, you could say learning Delta blues is an esoteric discipline because you had to go to the Delta and, you know, and actually sit down with a guy on a porch and hear him play this music to pick it up. It's sort of esoteric. Yeah. It's knowledge possessed by a few. And the idea is that you have to go to this specialized person and they say, I've got this knowledge and I can impart it to you, but it's sort of imparted experientially. And the problem with that is that, and I had the very best, I mean, I was fortunate. I got to study with, I probably studied with 8 or 9 different people, all of whom had studied with Alexander. And two or three of them I studied with in depth and were very, very competent, capable teachers. But the attitude was sort of like, I have this knowledge. I can't quite tell you what it is, but let me show you. And when I feel you've gotten it, then I'll let you know. And, you know, then when I have these experiences, they'd say, there it is. That's it. So now you kind of are in the know.
Yeah.
That's esoteric. And that's a problem because then when I was teaching and I hadn't developed the skills yet to help my own students, and that went on for quite a while where I really felt inadequate as a teacher.
Yeah.
I sort of was like, well, if I can't show you everything, I'm going to send you to them, you know, go to London where I have these great teachers. And that's a problem because now you're claiming you have this enlightened knowledge that you want to share, and yet you can't get it except by going to like 2 or 3 people in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, that's esoteric.
Esoteric. And then, you know, it's this strange thing where in the world of Alexander technique, the word teaching is almost synonymous with getting your hands on someone. Whereas anywhere else, teaching is sort of like telling you either a set of facts or a set of procedures to learn, or like, a set of algorithms, or, you know, showing you what you didn't know before. But in Alexander technique, you know, I've got to teach means like, I've got to get my hands on somebody, you know? So it's like imparting the knowledge through just showing somebody the physical stuff they need to learn through your hands.
Yeah,
esoteric,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. And you know this about me, but I mean, I've always had it kind of, it was just maybe my makeup, but as a young kid, I was sensitive to how bad schools I went to had been, how clueless teachers were, how unsupportive they were. I was a rebel about that. I thought this is not teaching. I felt that I believe that teachers should be able to should be supporting their students, all their students, not you know, shaming students. They should be able to share their knowledge, not put you down for not having it. There should be ways to teach you that were enlightened and generous and clear. And I thought what I was learning lacked some of those elements. Like,
yeah,
there's a procedure, ironically, about the voice. Very basic to what Alexander has figured out, called a whispered ah. It's a very simple controlled exhalation like this, or I don't think you hear that. But anyway,
blowing
air out or controlling the airflow. It's very basic to what goes on in vocalization. Alexander had developed this process or this procedure, and yet nobody could tell me what it was for. Nobody.
Yeah.
Including my very experienced teachers. And I thought, that's the exact opposite of what I think education is about.
Yeah.
You know, don't tell me to do it and I'll understand. Show me why, explain, make it clear. So I began to look at that myself. And I did that right out of my training when I went to grad school. I began looking at what are those procedures? How do they work? How does breathing work? And I began to try to figure out elements of these skills that could be identified, broken down, made clear, so that you could teach the way a young kid needs to learn.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've heard people say things like, you know, boiled down, the Alexander technique is hands on the back of the chair, which is a procedure, and the whispered ah, which is a procedure, and, you know, the inclined position, which is a procedure. And, you know, I remember thinking, like, how can that be the essence of this? Not, you know, like, how could a set of procedures be the essence of the knowledge? You know, it's almost like saying, you know, to Eugen Herigel, if he wants to learn Zen archery, it seems like, and I don't want to denigrate anybody, so I won't name names. So, but like, it seems like as though you would tell a student of Zen archery, the boiled down essence of Zen archery is about literally how you grip the bow. You know, or about how you pull the string. It doesn't seem to capture the true essence of something and why you have this noble dedication to this craft that's centuries long. Doesn't seem to match, you know?
Yeah. Or sometimes they'll say something that's deeper, like, you know, Zen art, it comes down to learning to get out of the way of nature or something like that, you know, get out of nature's way. But, and that's a deeper statement. And Alexander, we have comparable statements in the Alexander world, but they might be deeper, and they might encapsulate some ultimate insight. But that you can't foreshorten the learning process and now just say, well, if you understand that that's where you're going toward, you've understood it all. It's the what happens when you do that. Is the opposite. Everyone says, oh, I got it. I got the non-doing. It happened. I didn't get in the way. And I noticed that it happened on its own. And usually when students say that, it's a red flag for how they're oversimplifying what they need to go through.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a curriculum says, wait a minute, there's a lot of stages. There are some very basic things to learn, and we could say what they are. And it's going to be more interesting, a little more fun, a little more engaging.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a little more, like much more empowering.
Yeah. Much more. Yes.
Well, so how, you know, it's an interesting story. I mean, how did you, I know that you were working on this sort of thing for a long time. You know, you just mentioned that, like, right out of your training, you went to grad school and started looking at, like, not what the whispered ah is, but how breathing works, not what the whispered ah is, but how vocalization occurs. That's an investigation of something that's interesting. How what was the catalyst, or were there several catalysts that led to you understanding or recognizing fully the need for a curriculum? And, you know, how did you begin to understand not only what it was, but like the nature of a curriculum? Was this something that you always knew as an educator? You know, did someone have to come and tell you? Because it's not something that I always knew.
Yeah. Well, there were a couple of things. Let's say two things. One was that I had, because when I trained, I was so determined to figure out what was really going on, that I really worked hard at it. So I had a period of really intensive study in which I had insights that were more like endpoint insights.
Yeah.
So I kind of had a very clear idea, even though I didn't fully understand what was going on, I had a clear idea of where, of how much there was and how far you could go.
Mm.
That was one thing. So that was a person at a more personal level.
By the way, I'll just insert here. This is a story that you've written in your own narrative, which, you know, we're going to be publishing in the not too distant future. I think that's an exciting thing that's going to happen. Anyway.
And as you know, I wrote very brief, very brief version of that in my very first book,
The Undivided
which
Self,
which came out like years ago. But I didn't feel it sort of gives the end part of it, but I didn't really know how to express a lot of it. Now I finally have a fully developed narrative on that. Yeah. But the other part of it was that even though I had these sort of deeper convictions and insights that I wanted to convey, I felt that there was a field, that there was a subject that, you know, I kind of knew that if I was going to, I didn't want to just be a studio practitioner. You know, I knew that there was that side of what I'd done. You know, I guess when I had that deeper insight, I thought this is a foundational idea in education that needs to be developed.
Mm.
Kids are learning throughout school and then throughout our adult lives, blindly learning things, trying things without a knowledge of their own organism. And I thought that was such a profound missing gap in the field of education.
Yeah.
That's what interested me in doing it professionally. I mean, I had my own insights, but that made me interested in learning it and studying it. But what made me interested in doing it as a profession was the idea that I could develop those ideas, the feeling that I could develop those ideas as a new branch of the field of education that I think had been left out. And then I thought, well, when you think of it that way, there's a whole lot here to look at.
Yeah, it makes
how breathing works, how the body works, why we interfere with it, how to stop interfering with it, how to now do action, perform actions more consciously, how that applies to learning a skill, how that applies to how children are developing in school. I mean, there's all kinds of ramifications, and I began to explore some of them.
And you could tell, you know, based on what you've said, like this would really illuminate Alexander's writings, because it seems like he spent the bulk of his effort in his writing addressing this very topic, whether it was his criticism of the education system being like, you know, he used words that, you know, the education is based on the unconscious plane or the subconscious plane. And it's like, okay, like, what does he mean by that? And then, you know, it makes his writing a lot more transparent, but also it makes his passion for the subject a lot more transparent as well. It's like, oh, this is actually a very, you know, like reading your story, reading what you went through, and gaining a little bit of a grasp over what you call those endpoint insights, the real grasping of the subject. It makes Alexander's diagnosis of the importance of this subject, his real sense that he discovered an undiscovered country, a lot more understandable.
Yeah, and I did that too. I thought, well, that was sort of what I wanted to create, a school that would sort of exemplify these new ideas. And I thought to do that, I should write. But writing to me was like that. I should write about, you know, what did Alexander figure out in the field of, there's a big health and prevention component. Mm. There's a big, like you said, education component, a big skill and learning component. I thought, well, I could articulate that. And I began to do it in my writing.
Mm.
But when I began training teachers, which I didn't do till my first book came out around that time, and by now I was like, whatever, 40 or so, I guess, forgetting how old it was, maybe not quite. I thought, well, that's great. I'm getting better at teaching. I'm getting clear about some of the things I want to teach. I've got some good ideas and I'm getting clear. And I developed certain knowledge about anatomy. I could teach that as part of the course, the class, et cetera. But I still felt that there was no real defined curriculum.
Mm.
And I thought, that's why not? I mean, if there really is a field and there really is a whole series of competencies, and why can't it be taught and broken down? So what's a curriculum? A curriculum is the course that that the chariot runs. That's what a curriculum is.
It means
running, it means running that course. Yeah, mm. So what does that mean? Well, when we're learning a language or we're learning a particular Bach has a very defined curriculum for students of the keyboard, learning how to play intervals and scales and different keys. We have defined curriculums in all kinds of different areas. What about this one? Couldn't it be defined? And I thought, you know what? Maybe. And I began to, I mean, it took me longer than writing about these, the ramifications, but it dawned on me that there were definable pieces. You could break it down and you could teach it as a curriculum without reliance on this esoteric, you know, sect of people that could have to, you'd have to go to learn.
Right.
Right. And that became this book. This book.
Okay. Yeah. So for folks who are listening, Ted's holding up a copy of his recently published book last year, in fact, Sensory Motor Awareness. So you've called the curriculum that you've written by a name. I mean, you know, you've called it Sensory Motor Awareness, which is interesting.
Yeah. I want to, it needs to be, it requires a substantive name. Mm-hmm. I don't like how the Alexander technique is taught today. I think it's been watered down and become nearly meaningless. So I thought I've got to just do, and I don't want to be in a dispute with people in my field who think I'm right or I think they're right. I don't care. I want to just do something constructive here. I thought I'm going to give it my own, substantive name, define mm-hmm. it. And there are definable pieces. Of what you can learn. For instance, a really key part of Alexander's work, again, something he did not articulate, it was mainly conveyed through the use of the teacher's hands, but a big, big component is knowing how the body can work in a coordinated way.
Yeah.
But no one could express, even in the most basic terms, what that meant. You know, what does it mean for the body to be coordinated? Well, you could define it, you could theoretically, and you can define the process by which you can learn to bring about a better coordination of that system.
Yeah.
So that's a very important part of a curriculum. And a lot of the book is devoted to that, ways of bringing about a better working of the body in action.
Mm-hmm.
There's a necessary part of a defined curriculum.
Yeah. 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 And we've spent, two or three episodes of this podcast alone speaking about, you know, whether it's the concept of tensegrity or whether it's evolutionary biology, the emergence of forms in nature, or about the postural mechanism, you know, what you've called the PNR system, the postural neuromuscular reflex system, Alexander called the primary control. This is like, it's a big subject to talk about how the body works in action. And then it's another subject of how that functional design gets interfered with. That's an interesting fact. It's an interesting set of facts or subject in itself. And then how to restore it as a student, as a learner, as a sentient person who wants better health and more consciousness, how to restore that thing is actually part of the curriculum.
Yep.
No. So all of that stuff is part of the subject, but part of the curriculum is like, okay, you sort of learn what you're doing in action, and then you learn how to restore a system. You learn that there's a system to be restored. It's not just head going forward and up. There's actually more to it than this.
Yeah, exactly. And then, when Alexander developed his method, he developed this means of communicating experiences with his hands so that he could give you the experience of how that system works better. the idea there was that, oh, he could kind of abbreviate the process, make it a little bit easier to learn, show you some basic principles of action and movement, and now you could work, you know, apply yeah. that in your activities more easily. Well, that's fine.
And he was quite brilliant at it.
Yeah, he was brilliant at it. And, you know, and it's a nice way to learn. If someone comes to me as a private student, I don't see private students generally anymore. But if someone came to me who had a shoulder problem, they say, you know, Ted, I don't want to learn all this stuff. Just show me how I can, you know, sit more comfortably at a desk when I'm working at my computer. You could show them that. And that's a useful set of tools.
Yeah.
But there's much more to it. And in the Alexander world, people didn't want to, sometimes were reticent about saying that because they felt that if you made it too complicated, then people are going to shy away from wanting to learn.
Yeah.
But I look at it the other way around. Why do we withhold the knowledge in order to give people more, I don't know, hope or more encouragement? When there is more knowledge to be had, why, you know, you don't, a voice person doesn't say, well, I'm just going to show you in two or three lessons how you could use your voice better. But, and that's my subject. Of course not. We know that there's a whole rich, you know, subject to study with the voice. And there's a yeah. lot of research and writing and very interesting.
Yeah.
And the same is true of this field. And far from being discouraging, to me, that's an encouraging thing. You say there's a lot to learn, but I'm going to show you what you need for your purposes. It's mm-hmm. perfectly fine just to learn a bit of it. But
yeah.
if you want to dip into it and learn more, it's there. That to it's me there. Is a rational way to look at a field
yeah.
rather than yeah. control your audience and sort of fool them into thinking that there's some simplistic way to learn.
Right, right. It's, I mean, it's so much more accurate. Like, I know that mathematics goes as deeply as you can ever want. I don't want to go into it, you know, I don't have the interest or maybe even the talent, but like I have what I need or I have what I want. And what, yeah. what, and it's interesting too, because the mathematics that I know, if I time traveled 2,500 years ago, it would make me a genius. I know like a smattering right. of algebra, some geometry, some calculus, which is to a mathematician, the most basic crapola, you know, but it's like, it goes as deeply as you want. And I've taken with it, I've like taken what I need, as opposed to a mathematician saying, oh, you know, there's really nothing to mathematics. Just, you know, it's 2 + 2 and yeah. you know, it's X plus Y equals Z. And that's all there is. Don't worry.
Yeah. Yeah, silly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe another reason why we oversimplify it is because we, you know, many people oversimplify it because they don't know more about it. They want to,
oh, yeah.
they want to keep it simple. They want to kind of bamboozle their audience into thinking it's simple so that they could promote and market their simplistic. It's sort of like the, with all due respect, but it's sort of like, the very, very watered down versions of meditation that you saw in the 60s and 70s, where you go and yeah. you get, the teacher gives you your mantra, you do your mantra and you have sort of instant, it was sort of like John Lennon's song, you know, instant karma or
yeah, yeah.
you know, instant enlightenment. I mean, it's sort of like that. And how insulting to your audience and to your students and how insulting to the subject.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't elevate what you're doing. But again, there are people who want to promote, they want to make money from it. So they're going to simplify it. And they're going to have, we're always going to have that. You're always going to have the McDonald's, more McDonald's at the bottom of a pyramid and less quality at the top. It's going to narrow. That's how life is. But
McDonald's meaning the restaurant, you know, McDonald's. Well, you know, for folks who don't know, you know, like McDonald's, the fast food restaurant.
I wasn't putting that a person. Was that, did it sound
right,
like
yeah,
I'm talking?
Right.
Oh yeah, my neighbor, yeah, McDonald's yeah, yeah. here, you know.
Yeah.
Son
yeah.
of a gun. Yeah, no.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, you know, here we have, we can openly and freely share knowledge, not hold it back, develop it, recognize what we need to learn. And we could look at ourselves in a more open way. You saw me do that in class recently where people were talking about the topic of the PNR system. There's some controversy about it. It's good to talk about it. It's good to do diligence. It's good to question your own ideas to see if maybe perhaps they need to be rethought or revised.
Yeah.
That's part of being a healthy profession.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, so the necessity of a curriculum, you know, it was always pretty clear to you as someone who knew that you wanted to be an educator since you were very young. This is something that you've told your students. You knew that you wanted to be an educator, or you knew you had something to say about it since the time you were very young, far before you ever discovered Alexander's work.
Yeah.
And then with Alexander's work, you know, you're taking your interest in education and your real sense that most students are being left behind in any subject. Teachers often congratulate themselves based on the fact that they have a couple of geniuses as their students, which is no education at all for most of us. And then with like Alexander's work, realizing that not only the profession doesn't really have the necessary tools yet, but even in Alexander's own writings, as profound as they are, and even his first person account of his own study doesn't really lay out the steps that are required to learn even what he said that he learned.
No.
You know?
Yeah, you know, I searched in his books for whatever was there that you could glean about actually learning, breaking down a procedure, understanding a particular problem. And he has bits and pieces. So he did quite a lot that he was trying to get clear on elements of work of the, you know, what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, his books are very theoretical and kind of difficult. They're really like philosophy. And his own account tells you how he struggled, but it doesn't really give you the basis of a curriculum.
Yeah.
And I thought, yeah, but there, you know, over time, I realized you could find pieces of it and articulate it. And as I mentioned, there was one piece that came to me kind of, was it right around the beginning of the pandemic? And
it was earlier than that.
Was earlier.
It was actually earlier.
It was earlier. Yeah.
Yeah, it was maybe 2018, 2019. Because this was right around the time. Yeah, you know, like you wanted to build a story around this particular insight that you had. Because you had been for years looking for ways to teach people without the necessity of hands.
Yeah. That was it. We had a web.
It's so important to get this, and you were searching for it, and you found something. You found a sort of a keystone piece.
Yeah, you remember we had someone, so here we were running the school. This was before the pandemic. I forget. It was sort of a little, it fit into the pandemic very nicely because the pandemic happened. And then I said, wow, I'm going to try out these ideas. And it gave me a kind of a platform to try them out. But remember we were in class and we had people come in and we were observing people and how they moved. We had an artist come in drawing it. And I was beginning to frame some of the empirical kind of movement problems that could be looked at and made sense of. And we were all looking at that. That was interesting, wasn't
it? Yeah. And I remember, you know, before that, like just before that, I think when you were first formulating your writing about this, I remember during, it might've been 2016, 2017, you know, you just asked certain questions when I was like scratching my head about, you said, you know what we don't often do? We don't often ask what we mean or what Alexander meant by shortening in stature.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, isn't that what we do all the time though? But you were getting something from it.
Yeah.
You were saying we don't ask really what he meant by shortening in stature. And even Alexander, in his writing, he wrote, this is the best phrase that I can come up with. It's not adequate. You really have to look more. And, you know, it's very clear that Alexander understood deeply what this
deeply
meant, but it was not simply the pulling back of the head, whatever that might mean. It's not simply the, you know, the tightening of this or that. So he could look at somebody and be like, oh, you know, and you were beginning to do this. And that was, it was very, propitious. I mean, you know, as terrible as the pandemic was, it was when everybody was left to their own devices.
Yeah.
You know, everybody was meeting online. Everybody was concerned about passing on a disease to someone else. And so we weren't meeting in private rooms anymore. It's like, what do we have except to speak to each other and to learn from each other?
Yeah, wasn't it amazing? Because all of a sudden when I said, listen, no one knows what to do online, schools were in the Alexander, schools were closing down everywhere. And I said, no problem, we're closing down my school, but let's figure out this Zoom thing. Let's go on Zoom. We offered, we sent out to our mailing list free classes. And the next thing we knew, we had 1,000 people online. And what it told me was that there was a huge hunger and curiosity for knowledge that people had never gotten. It wasn't simply that they had nowhere to go. People, this is true of any field, you can insult people and oversimplify and oversell things, but that's not really what they want, even if they buy that. What people really want, what we all want, is real knowledge, real delivered with integrity by people who have an honest passion for understanding a subject. And when you get that, you say, that's what I really wanted. Because as human beings, we're easily manipulated. We're easily, all of us, you know, have you know, it's kind of a lower side. And we might go toward that and say, well, I want a cheaper answer or something simple, simple answers. But we also have a higher side, and we want to be appealed to and at a higher level.
Yeah.
And identifying this subject is part of that. It's saying there's real knowledge. This is interesting. Don't worry about if it looks complicated to people. Give them real people. We want to be, even a six-year-old wants to be treated with respect by their teachers. And even a six-year-old doesn't want to be told what the answer is, but wants a teacher to work in partnership to look at a problem. And then the teacher say, that's wonderful. I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
And let's figure it out together, because that's appealing to the highest part of a child.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's adults are no different, you know?
Yeah. And so, you know, I think as we wrap up this episode, you know, we can look ahead, you know, I think that, you know, we'll be talking more about perhaps digging into more about what you've written that is necessary within the curriculum, or, you know, why you've chosen certain things. But yeah, like over the next few episodes, we'll be speaking about some of that, and we'll be speaking about some other topics as well, which we'll which we'll decide upon. But you know, today was like your personal discovery of the particular curriculum that's necessary to learn, not to teach, not how to teach, but actually how to gain mastery of your own self, your own organism within this subject. And then maybe the next time, you know, we can talk about actually some of the real things that you've put in that curriculum, you know? So,
okay. Yeah. That's a little bit, you know, a little bit analogous to what we're doing in class, the online class we're doing on Monday that you mentioned. So yeah, that's a good topic for next time. So I'll keep that in mind. We'll talk about that and come up with some of those topics we can share.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks, Ted, for the conversation. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you all.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next time, and we'll talk to you next time.